Well, good morning, PCC. My name's Andrew. I'm the student ministry pastor here, and I actually had the opportunity of kicking off our Jesus is More series back in February, and now I get to come back and continue on a little bit, which is exciting. And I figured, you know what, I should probably start things out somewhat differently, really stick to my youth pastor roots. And cling to that, and start with almost a little something different. So I want you to think for just a moment, what's a show you loved growing up? What's a TV show you loved growing up? And I ask you this question because I think the one that I loved growing up actually goes really well with today. See, one of the shows I loved growing up, it was called Mythbusters. It's called Mythbusters, and for those of you who don't know, basically the premise of this show was started off with two special effect engineers, and they would try to recreate all the crazy things that you saw on TVs and movies, and they would make it in real life. And so they would, as a kid, it was just amazing to see like all these James Bond or Batman or even stuff from cartoons being brought to life and seeing just the reality of it right in front of you. Now, I bring this up because in one episode, what's interesting is they actually try to recreate the miracle that we're going to look at today. And I think it's so interesting and so enlightening to human nature, because I'm going to show you a clip in just a second, and it's a clip of two really smart people just failing miserably at trying to recreate the miraculous. So take a look real quick.
Adam and Jamie are rapidly realizing that the concept of man running on water is every bit as improbable as it sounds. Adam built two fancy lizard feet and a Godzilla tail. All he managed to do was to half drown an acrobat.
I can't say that my rig was a success. I mean, we definitely did not see the human lizard hybrid skipping across the water that I had dreamed about.
But Jamie has dreams of his own, and Jessica's job is to make them come true.
So what do you call these, shovel shoes?
Shovel shoes they are. Kind of has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
Yep.
True to form, Jessica's soon up and flapping.
How about trying to do a little run?
It seems like she's found her inner lizard.
There you go.
Jamie's also relying on a bigger surface area to help keep Jess afloat. But Adam's shoes were flat, and these concave feet could make a real difference. On the other hand, the ski's too cumbersome to carry, so she won't get much of a run-up.
Okay, shovel shoes in 3, 2, 1, go!
Okay, that was just embarrassing. So maybe the ski should go the way of the tail.
All right, shovel shoes without the sled. In 3, 2, 1, go! Hey!
She's a good sport.
Uh-huh. We could try this 100 times, and I don't think we'd get running on water.
No, I don't think we would.
I don't know about you, but there's no way that stunt woman got paid enough for what she was doing up there. There's just no way, and I feel bad for her, but while we laugh at these failed attempts, I think it's an insight into our own human nature, because while we may not be building some intense contraptions, shovel shoes, lizard tails, anything like that, I think we do often try to recreate the miraculous in our own lives, and we try to do it on our own. See, I think just like the Mythbusters, we come up with elaborate schemes, or we tell ourselves lies, or we throw money towards something, anything to create this miraculous experience for ourselves. But today, what I want us to see, and in continuation with our series, is that the reason that this didn't work is because Jesus is better. He's better. He's not your ordinary miracle worker. He's so much more than that. And my goal for us today is to really dive into John 6. And as we dive into John 6, into what is really a well-known miracle, we're going to see this element of Jesus being better play out. So if you will, just turn with me to John chapter 6, or click on your feed towards John chapter 6. And as you do, let me just set the scene just for a moment so we know where we are. Now, this miracle picks up really right after where we left off last week. And if you remember last week, Ken led us through the feeding of the 5,000. So today, we're following up that right away. I'm talking like the very next verse. And so since this miracle is coming on the heels of the feeding of the 5,000, there's a buzz in the air. There's a momentum that's building with the crowd. People are talking. People are getting ideas. So much so that they want to actually make Jesus king. There's talk amongst the crowd to just take him, start a revolution, and make Jesus king. But what's interesting is that as this starts brewing, Jesus, he withdraws. He doesn't jump in, he withdraws. And I have to imagine, that had to be a little confusing, probably, if you were one of the disciples. I mean, think about it. Everything probably seemed to be going as planned. You've found the right person. You've been joining in. All of a sudden, all this momentum was building behind him. But then all of a sudden, Jesus backs away. I wouldn't be surprised if several of them may have even been disappointed. But that's kind of where we're heading into today. Because in this miracle, what happens right afterwards is Jesus withdraws, and he gives his disciples a somewhat interesting job. He tells them to get into a boat and to cross the Sea of Galilee and head towards Capernaum, and to do so actually without him. So basically, get a head start, cross the sea, and I'll meet you over there. And that's where we pick up today, because our miracle takes place right as they're crossing the sea. So John chapter 6, verse 16 is where we're going to pick up. It says this: when evening came, his disciples went down to the sea. They got into a boat and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on water and coming near the boat, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." And they wanted to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the land towards which they were going. Now, this is a pretty well-known miracle. I mean, if you've ever been to Sunday school, I'm sure you paid attention to it on the flannel graph or something like that. And so you've heard this before. But I think what's interesting is John's take is relatively short. I mean, it's 5 verses. And I know when I was preparing, I was a little intimidated by that, because I was like, wow, there's going to be a lot I have to get out of such a small section. But the more I began to dive into it, the more I began to see more and more, and I think as we read John's take, we actually see 3 pretty interesting things about miracles and about how Jesus is better. And so the first one is this. It's one that I think is really important. It's miracles happen when you can't touch the bottom. Miracles happen when you can't touch the bottom. In 2019, my family and I decided to get our certification for scuba diving. Now, we had been snorkeling on trips, and I'd even done a beginning scuba dive lesson kind of thing, but to make the leap all the way to a certification, it was a rather large one, I'll admit, but nevertheless, that's what we decided to do, and so in the fall of 2019, we completed all of our classes, we passed our written exam, and then we got into a pool, and we passed our practice test where we had to do like our skills underwater in a little pool. What happened, though, afterwards is after you do that, you don't get your certification because you need to go show that you know what you're doing now in the big leagues. You got to jump into an ocean and redo your skills. So we hopped onto the Catalina Express. We drove down in the middle of November to ferried down in the middle of November to Catalina, put on wetsuits so thick that I had to waddle around instead of walk, as you can see from my face there. It was hard to breathe. And then jumped into the freezing cold water. And as you jump in the water, you have to start doing these drills. And so I brought this to kind of show you my least favorite drill that I had to do, which I thought was very important. So you have this on your back, and it's a tank. Now, the very first drill is my least favorite, because what it is you have to take your regulator right here, your source of oxygen, and take it out of your mouth and just throw it behind you. And just that's all. Just take out your air underwater and throw it behind you. And then use your skills to kind of find it, bring it back to you, clear it before you can breathe again. Now, I had done this before, so I knew what I was doing, but I had only done it in a pool. And if something goes wrong in a pool, it's pretty easy to save yourself. I mean, if I couldn't find it and I was struggling, something was going wrong, even in the deep end, I was like a few doggy paddles away from just being able to stand up and breathe again. Now, when you're doing it 40 feet deep, it feels a little bit different. And I think it felt different, not because I wasn't safe. I was still safe. I was just as safe, actually probably a little more safe, because I had instructors all around me, and they knew what they were doing. They're experts. But I think it felt different because I couldn't be my own hero anymore. I couldn't rely on myself anymore. No longer, if something went wrong, could I be the one that got myself out of the trouble. Instead, I would have to trust one of them to save me. And so I think there's something that feels different when you go out deep enough to where you can't be the one to save yourself anymore. And you're out so deep that you can no longer touch the bottom. And I think, reading into this miracle, that's exactly where the disciples were. Because see, the Sea of Galilee, it's 13 miles long and it's 8 miles wide. And in its full season, it's about 141 feet deep. That's a whole lot deeper than my mere 40 feet that I went. And in the story, it tells us the disciples are about 3 or 4 miles out to sea. And what that means is that they are not near either shore. They're not in the kiddie pool anymore. They're out in the deep end. So as things start to go wrong and the wind starts to howl and the waves start to roar, they're now nowhere near shore. They're out in the deep end on their own where they can't touch the bottom anymore. But I think if we really read the Bible and we see, you don't see a lot of miracles that happen next to the safety of the shore. You don't see a lot of miracles that happen in the shallow end. Often miracles happen where you can't touch the bottom anymore. And I think, just like me when I was scuba diving, faith likewise feels differently when you're out deep enough where you can't save yourself anymore. I think it feels differently when you can no longer just rely on yourself. When you're willing to paddle out deep enough to the middle of the lake, just as Jesus tells you and just as he tells the disciples, when you're willing to go out there, there's something in your relationship, there's something in your faith, I think, that changes. And I think there was something for them that changed. And I think that actually brings us to really our second one. And in order to tie in with Ken's lesson from last week, I think the second thing we see is this. It's that miracles happen outside the box. If you remember last week, Ken mentioned this a little bit when he's talking about, you know, we need to be outside the box or think outside the box. And I think you actually see that happen in this miracle. I think you see a miracle happen outside the box because Jesus shows up in this miracle in the most unimaginable way, in the most unimaginable place. I mean, it's so strange, the way and the place that Jesus shows up, that the reaction of the disciples is not we're saved, it's we're terrified, we're worried. They didn't think at first they saw Jesus, they thought they saw a ghost. And the superstition of sailors adding in with the darkness of night and being wet and cold and waves all around you, I'm sure many of them just thought, this is the end, this is it, this is over. But instead of being met with a jump scare, they were met with a surprise safety. Because even though it was in such a strange method, in such an unimaginable place they were met with, they were met with their Savior rather than a ghost. And I actually think that it's this really unlikely setting that this miracle becomes something more. It becomes something personal and intimate for his disciples. Because as we've been doing our miracles in John, and if you can think back to some of them, as you're picturing them in your mind, you'll know that all the miracles up until this point, even the wedding at Cana, they happened for others to see. Others could see the miracles. Even if they missed it, like at the wedding at Cana, there was still that potential to see what Jesus was doing. Here, though, the only audience is the disciple. They are the only ones that get to witness this miracle happening. And I think almost in a sense, it was something special for them. I wonder if the disciples needed this. Having just come off of the feeding of the 5,000 and feeling the energy of the crowd and feeling the chaos that was brewing and feeling all the people's wants and desires, I wonder if the disciples needed a personal, unique experience to recenter themselves onto who Jesus really was, to remind themselves that it's him they need to follow, not what other people want or what even they want for themselves, to have a personal display from their Lord in order to clear up all the commotion, all the chaos that they may have gotten lost in. And I think it's this personal miracle that actually encourages the disciples who they are. See, John's this personal gospel. It's written by a very personal member of Jesus' group, and so he highlights this intimate and personal nature often, and I think he's doing so here. I think he's saying, hey, not only did this miracle reveal who Jesus was, but it actually showed us who we are too. Because Jesus sought out his disciples even in the most unlikely place. Even in the most unlikely timing, he still sought them out. And what an encouragement that had to be. What an encouragement that had to be sought after Jesus in even the most unlikely place. Now, I'm gonna cheat for just a second, and forgive me for doing so, but I'm gonna borrow from another account on this miracle for just a moment, because it's in three of the Gospels, and so I think it's fair to just check back with them every once in a while. And so I'm doing this because in Mark's account, in Mark 6, what's interesting is that we get a little Easter egg. A little Easter egg is left by the author, and see if you can notice it. Because in Mark 6, verse 48, we see this. When he saw that they were straining at the oars against an adverse wind, he came towards them early in the morning, walking on the sea. He intended to pass them by. I'm stopping there because I think it's sometimes important to stop at things that you may have found strange. Now, that sounds a little strange to me, right? He is walking on the water, and he sees them straining, but he actually intended to pass them by. What? Like, was Jesus originally just, kind of strolling to Capernaum, and it was only once he saw his disciples straining, he, changed course? But I don't really think that's what's happening. I think what's often with all these miracles, we kind of see something strange. Instead of just taking it at face value, we really got to dive into it. And I think when you dive into it, you see something super amazing that reveals again just how much Jesus is more. Because this phrase, pass them by, I think, is a little bit of an Easter egg. Mark's leaving it in there so that his audience can think back to another time. So for those of you who have expressed that you're Bible trivia nerds or you love that kind of stuff and you always get early for the intro and get all the questions right, think back in your mind, when was another time where we have this pass them by kind of language? And for those of you who are like, I can't think about that, I'll give you the answer, don't worry. Because the answer comes in Exodus, and it comes with Moses. And so he's leaving in this kind of Easter egg that's pointing back to another time where God, specifically his glory, passes by someone. And in Exodus 33 and 18, Moses says this, Lord, show me your glory, I pray. And the Lord says, I will make all my goodness pass before you and will proclaim before you the name of the Lord. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy to whom I will show mercy. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no one should see my face and live. And the Lord continued, see, there is a place where you shall stand on the rocks, and while my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen. So there's this little Easter egg event that's happening in the miracle. It's a callback to where God passes by Moses. And it's a truly, this story, I think, in Exodus is really a truly intimate experience. I mean, Moses, even if it was just his back, got to witness God's glory firsthand. And I think the disciples are likewise experiencing a similar, profoundly personal and intimate experience as well. Because Jesus is putting on a private display just for them of his power and the authority that he wields. He's revealing that to them. And he's passing by them in order to assure them that he's actually with them and that his presence is with them. And in doing so, it's connecting these two stories, I think, in a way that, again, not only shows how special the disciples are, but makes this connection between Jesus and Yahweh's presence on Mount Sinai. And so I think the gospel writers is trying to tell us, pay attention. Pay attention. Jesus is more. He's more. He's not just performing a miracle. He's more than just a miracle worker. I think that kind of brings us then to our third thing, and I think the area that I really felt like I needed to spend a lot of time in. And this third one is this, is miracles happen as we're beaten. Miracle, that happens. That happens, it's normal. Miracles happen as we are being beaten down by the waves. Miracles happen as we're being beaten down by the waves. I hope this is actually some imagery that you can connect with, considering that we're like sort of a beach town. I mean, the beach is pretty close. You can see it from a lot of the hill. And so maybe you have a memory of swimming and playing in the waves and getting tossed and turned or pushed around by one that was too big for you. I know I do, because I'm actually originally from Huntington Beach. And as such, there was a time in my life that I actually did used to love to surf. It was a short time in my life, but if you're from Huntington, there's almost like this pressure on you that you have to try it, that you have to see if it's your next, like, great love. And, you know, one of my best friends was a surfer, so I was like, okay, I guess I have someone to go with. And actually, my church youth group had a Sunday morning outreach where they would take kids surfing and then take them to church. So I was like, okay, I've got a perfect time to try it. After doing it for a while and finding some great enjoyment, my parents, being very thoughtful, bought me a new surfboard for Christmas. And I was super excited because no longer would I have to carry the like 12-foot foam surfboards that were like twice or three times my size. Now I had this brand new, just amazing looking board where I was like, okay, now I can show off in front of everyone. This is my time to take it to the next level. Unfortunately, though, my love for surfing, it really didn't last much longer after getting my new present. And parents, I'm sure you can feel that pain that comes with that. But in my defense, it really came, I blame it on one experience. Because not long after I got my surfboard, our family went to San Diego just for a few days. And in my excitement, while everyone started to unpack, I just took my surfboard and ran to the ocean. I paddled out to the waves. I started to sit on it and started to scope out my next set. The problem was I was probably a little too overeager, and I ended up paddling myself into a riptide, and I just began to get pulled out to sea. And my excitement, it quickly turned to dread. As I sat back down, I started paddling as hard as I could, but I remember that no matter how hard I paddled, the shore just got farther and farther away. And the dread I was feeling inside, it started to turn to panic, and then started to turn to hopelessness as I became more and more exhausted with each paddle. And the thought just crept into my mind, like, does it even matter? Why am I paddling? I'm just losing this battle. Well, not only was I being pulled out, thankfully I was being pulled down the shoreline too. And because of that, I thankfully came into range of a lifeguard tower, and they saw me just flailing out there wildly. And so thankfully, they came out on a jet ski and saved me and pulled me to shore. I just remember that feeling of when I hit the ground, and I hit dry land, and internally, I just I had the press conference where I announced my retirement of surfing because I had lost to the waves. I was beaten down, and I didn't enjoy that feeling. I didn't enjoy being in that place, and I didn't want to go back out there. And I think just like me, the disciples, they were fighting a losing battle against the waves. I think John makes it pretty evident. And I think for the audience, they probably connected well with that because they knew, because of its location and because the Sea of Galilee is pretty far below sea level, that's actually pretty common for a wind to hit it and for the sea to just become a nightmare for sailors, even today. And so in a very brief statement, John just lets us know, and I'm sure he knows his original audience is going to connect easily with this, that the seas became really rough. He says that the sea became rough because of a strong wind was blowing. And the funny thing is Mark, I think, throws in an extra word just to kind of like really let people know. He says, you know, the disciples, they were straining at the oars. And so the disciples, they were paddling with everything they could for hours to reach the other side. I don't think there was any hope, though, in sight. I think they were feeling like they were being beaten down by the waves, like they were losing that fighting battle. I think it's connected, though, because it made me wonder, have you ever felt that way? Have you ever understood what they're feeling? Have you ever felt like you're being beaten down by the waves? Are you feeling it right now? I know I've felt it. I've felt it often, and I felt it a lot this year. It's been a hard year, and Bruce pointed out the one-year anniversary and thinking back on it, and you know, I think one of the things I have thought back to was there were a lot of times I felt really beaten down by the waves. There were a lot of times I felt that pressure. I felt that being dragged out. It's been a hard year, really in ministry as well. Thankfully, though, I'm not the only one. I know a lot of us are questioning how we may feel because we may feel more threatened now or anxious or lonely or stressed more than we had ever been before. And people have been doing some research on it. And in a recent report, Barna noted that 1/3 of all the people they surveyed, including Christians, had felt like depression and anxiety had impacted their relationships more than anything else. And I know talking to parents that this has been an incredibly hard year for kids as well. Now, it's not only been this year, but I know in our recent memory we can think back to what we've been feeling. I think, unfortunately, the problem is that we live in a culture where we're kind of taught to hide these feelings. We're taught to hide them behind a nice-looking filter and express all the joys we're feeling. Or even in church, we're told to, you know, almost bury them down and sing praises. To just bury what we're feeling deep inside and to just keep on paddling. Just keep paddling because sooner or later you'll get yourself out of it. But I think to just paddle and to paddle and to paddle and to not feel like there's any hope in sight, well, that's exhausting. And it's exhausting not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually. It's exhausting. What I want to tell you as we look at this miracle, that it's not weakness to admit to Jesus you can't paddle through the storm you're going through. It's not weakness to admit to Jesus that you can't paddle through the storm in your marriage. It's not weakness to admit to Jesus that you can't paddle through the storm of financial trouble you're in. It's not weakness to admit to Jesus that you can't paddle through the storm of just loneliness or feelings that you can't paddle through. It's not weakness to admit to Jesus that you need him to get through the storm you're going through. It's not weakness to stop paddling as hard as you can. We need to stop trying to create our own miracles. And we need to learn to give it over to Jesus. I think because when we're beaten down by the waves, and when we turn to Jesus in those moments, that's when the miraculous begins to happen. And that's exactly what happened for the disciples. I found this part so interesting because I think in all my years of reading it, I never paid it any attention. But as the disciples are losing this battle to the waves, all of a sudden Jesus comes. And when he comes, and you know, we like to highlight some of the other parts of the stories, but one that's really interesting that John focuses on is that when he comes, they invite him into the boat. And the second he gets into the boat, they're immediately to the shore. They're immediately in safety. And John makes really big note of that. This doesn't mean that Jesus got in at the last minute, like he jumped in at the very end and got credit for everything. Because John's very clear, they were only 3 miles in, 4 maybe. John's showing that Jesus not only calmed disciples with his presence, but also with his actions. And so I think we kind of get a two-part miracle. We get the miracle that we often focus on where Jesus walks on the water, How amazing that is. But you also get the second miracle, if you're like me, that we often miss. This miracle of Jesus in his presence immediately bringing them out of the storm, bringing them to safety. And I think that happens because miracles happen when we're being beaten down by the waves. And it happens because Jesus is more. He's not your ordinary miracle worker. Jesus is actually revealing he's so much more. Adam, Jamie, and the rest of the Mythbusters that we saw in the clip, I'll be honest with you, there's some modern-day miracle workers right there, okay? If you really watch the show, the stuff they pull off is just mind-blowing. But even they couldn't recreate this miracle. Even they couldn't figure this out. And perhaps that's why this walking on water miracle has just perplexed our culture for years. We feel like it's something we should be able to recreate. We should be able to outsmart this. But the miracle remains undefeated. And I think it's because Jesus is more. He's more. The next thing, though, is that Jesus is calling us to more. Because he is more, he is likewise calling us, his followers, to more as well. And you don't see it happen in John, but Jesus wasn't the only one to walk on water that day. Now think back to your Sunday school lessons or something like that, because we know Jesus wasn't the only one. And in Matthew's account of the miracle, he adds on the story where Peter also gets to walk on the water. It happens, I'll read it, it'll be on the screen in just a second, where Peter gets out of the boat, and in getting out of the boat, he gets to be a part of the miraculous. Verse 28 says this, Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come out of the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on water, and came towards Jesus. But when he noticed the strong winds, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Miracles happen when we get out of the boat. Now, I think often we're a little unfair to Peter. We like to highlight the part where he sinks. I'll probably do that a little later, too. But I don't think we notice that, Peter's the only one that got out of the boat. He's the only one that got out of the boat. And I think he did that because he realized who Jesus was. He was willing to take that risk because he knew who Jesus was. If you want to be a part of the miraculous, you got to be willing to get out of the boat. Are you wishing you had a small group back? Go into your backyard, pull out some chairs, open the church directory, and make some calls. Do you wish there was a way where you could connect with people on Zoom? Just talk with church members and build a community? Open up your laptop, open up the app, schedule a meeting, and just start inviting people. Maybe you wish we volunteered with these people or this organization, went to this area, or anything like that. Don't wait for us. Go get it started. Because I think really amazing and encouraging thing, and perhaps something I realized when thinking back on this last year, as I kind of got my homework early from Bruce, was this. We've kind of got creative. And so no matter what your feelings are in COVID, there's a way to get out of the boat. There's a way to jump in into what God is doing. The better question is, are you willing? Are you willing to take that step? And it makes me think, the miracle, kind of like missing out, right? I wonder how the other disciples thought back to this miracle. The other ones who didn't get out of the boat. I wonder if they feel like they missed out at a certain point. Because they got to witness something truly amazing. I mean, so much so that they wrote about it later, right? But they also had the chance to be a part of it. They also could have been like Peter and experienced it firsthand. I think the same is true for us. Don't wait on the sidelines because it's more comfortable. You got to get out of the boat and be a part of the miraculous. Now, I said, we often talk about Peter sinking and harp on that probably more than focusing on the fact that he's the one that gets out of the boat. And I will too, just for a second. Because I think there is something to be learned from that. There's something that we can learn from Peter, because, see, Peter, He was only able to walk on water while he was looking at Jesus. While he was looking at Jesus, he was able to be part of the miraculous. But the second that he looks away, he begins to sink. So when we get out of the boat, we need to be keeping our eyes and our hearts on Jesus. Not on our own wants, not on our own desires, not on our own feelings. It needs to be kept on Jesus, because when Peter's eyes are on Jesus, he's part of the miraculous. But when he looks away, it begins to sink. We're called to get out of the boat, not rock the boat. Well, can I just lament with you for just like a second? I think just throughout the world, throughout our culture, throughout our collective churches, throughout everything, just in the last year, I think there's been more rocking the boat than getting out of the boat. I think that's been hard on us. But every single study I read on this passage, and I read a lot of them to make sure, made it pretty clear that when you get out of the boat, you make sure your eyes are on Jesus. And then you get to be a part of something even more miraculous than you could even imagine. Because miracles happen when we get out of the boat with our eyes and our hearts focused on Jesus. Will you pray with me? God, we just come before you today looking at a miracle that we probably have seen or heard several times before. But God, I just pray as we dive into it and have seen it, that we just listen to the ways that you are working and moving in our lives and moving in our church, God. So God, I just pray that we can really see who you are like Peter did, and feel that motivation of knowing you, and feel that to pull us to get out of the boat and to just be a part of the miraculous, be a part of the ways that you are at work in the world today. And God, I just pray that this church can be a group of people that does that shows others who you are by getting out of the boat, Lord. So we just pray this really in your name and humility towards you. Amen.